you and two women in an apartment.
In an apartment.
In a relationship.
Correct.
You guys remember Project Loon, the balloons by Google to give internet to areas that don't normally have connectivity by putting these like weather balloons up in the sky?
Yeah, I think they were testing them out in New Zealand.
Yeah, and now they've gotten approval, it appears, to try them out in Puerto Rico. Now, it's no longer Google. They're now part of Alphabet, and don't make a mistake there. It's two different
things. That's important.
Yeah. But they have gotten permission, at least from the FCC, to fly for 6 months over Puerto Rico.
Well, that makes sense. You know, a lot of their didn't a lot of their infrastructure get knocked out?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So it gives people a way to contact people.
Yeah, I guess the details aren't complete yet, but in the application of the FCC, Alphabet included emails and letters of recommendation from carriers in Puerto Rico, which are asking for Project Loon to come in and giving them permission to use their frequencies for disaster relief, too.
I guess in that case, like, why not? I'm sure maybe it's a little more complexity, but if it can help, that's...
Yeah.
It's nice to see the regulatory agencies make a quick change like this, too.
Yeah.
It gives, on Alphabet's side, it gives them a nice test case to see how much they can scale.
Yeah, I guess what Google, or I guess Alphabet is saying is, we kind of have more work than we would normally have, because this is sort of a moonshot project, because we also have to get integrated with all of their local telcos. We've got some on board, but it's a lot of integration that would have to go there to get people on the actual network.
And I don't know if you guys know this, but telcos, not always up to the most modern specs. They don't move super fast.
Well, on the other hand, when you have hurricanes that knock everything out, maybe they are.
Maybe.
Yeah, no kidding, right? So each balloon can serve 5,000 square kilometers, so almost 2,000 square miles. And they'll float about 12.5 miles up in the sky.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So you might not even really be able to see them. You won't be able to see them. And they relay communications between ground stations that Google, or I guess, again, Alphabet, will have to go set up or modify.
Okay. So there's still cell towers on the ground.
Something, yeah.
But instead of ground-based infrastructure, the Loon balloons provide that.
Right. Right. And they're working on some coordination of those ground stations right now. So that's like part of all of this is sort of up in the air. But they say once they're in place, it wouldn't be just data. It would also be voice communications as well. So that's a pretty big deal.
I kind of like how our planet is slowly becoming like this multi-layered internet thing. You got the traditional ground stuff, then you got the balloons that are going to be in the sky, and then apparently we're making a mesh network internet in space too. Yeah.
The planet's one big IoT device now.
Yeah. This is the cloud in the clouds.
DigitalOcean.com. Go to DigitalOcean.com and use our promo code of absolute power and authority. Here's the thing.
Chris.
Yeah, what?
I got to stop you right here.
Okay, go ahead.
You got to check out these DigitalOcean spaces.
Dude, these spaces are spaces for days.
Yeah.
It's object storage, but like you've never seen it before. Scalable object storage for human beings. Yep. They should take that and run with it. I just came up with that. Right? That's good, right?
Oh, it's great.
But yeah. See, now you're being exclusionary. What if you want object storage for robots?
Or bots, actually, because they do have a really easy, perfectly straightforward API that bots could take advantage of. So you're right. I was excluding the robots. DigitalOcean.com, you can scale up infrastructure on demand or use their brand new, beautiful, simple, reliable object storage. DigitalOcean.com. You create the account, use the promo code, here's the thing, then you get a $10 credit. Now, you're doing one of them traditional Linux boxes? Well, then I recommend you check out the 3 cents an hour system. You get 2 gigs of RAM, 2 CPUs, 40 gigabytes of SSD, and 3 terabytes of transfer. Plus, you can deploy an entire open source stack. That's my deployment sound. You can deploy that stack ready to go with a single click, or build a system from scratch, add storage and memory as you need it.
I got to give a shout out to those poor BSD guys, too. You can get nice cheap BSD
that's true.
Droplets.
Yeah, that's true. And you know what? Great way to play around with ZFS with their block storage. And they have so many new features these days, like network-level firewalls, alerting and monitoring, performance metrics, and, of course, data centers all over the world. And then they've still managed to keep the dashboard really simple and straightforward and easy to use. You want a personal Linux box or one for production or just messing around and learning? Go to DigitalOcean.com, create the account, and use our promo code Here's the Thing. And a big thank you to DigitalOcean for sponsoring User Air. DigitalOcean.com, promo code Here's the Thing. couple of questions have come into the show this week, so we'll start with the follow-up one. Hashtag AskAir. Love the chat about online streaming services. What are your guys' follow-up thoughts about CBS Access Online and the others now that The Orville is out and Star Trek Discovery is out? I have some. I don't know if either of you guys have been dealing with any of these streaming services to get these shows. No? So I've been watching The Orville via YouTube TV using their DVR functionality. And I've actually ended up watching Star Trek Discovery via CBS Access app on my Android TV, which I thought for sure I would pay for the subscription and then promptly go pirate it. But I just haven't had time to do that. So, and it's been okay. You know, I'd say disappointedly so. The CBS All Access feels the most kludgy. I sign in. The page feels weird to sign in. There's all these options that I don't care about. All these
install Adobe Flash.
And then you have to use Flash on the desktop.
No, really?
Yeah.
Still?
Yeah. So that's a bit of a bummer.
I mean, at least it's not Silverlight.
That's a win.
But it is it's pretty good on the TV. You know, the app's not bad. The app's pretty usable and serviceable. And as long as I hit play and then let it pause and buffer for a bit, I can watch it without issue. I think this is Disney is also just launched. They've announced they're gonna pull off of like a lot of the streaming services and they're gonna launch their own streaming service. I think we're gonna go through a round of this. As streaming technology becomes something that's more commonplace and more deliverable and more commoditized, more and more companies are going to get the cockamamie idea that they should just roll their own streaming solution. So what CBS is doing, while I wish it was just put it all on Netflix for everyone or put it all up on Google Play and YouTube and iTunes or whatever, or Amazon, they're not going to do that. Not for a little while. I think a lot of these companies are going to have to play this thing out. Yeah. And they're going to have to just try because it's a whole nother level of creative freedom, and it's a whole nother level of control. It's a whole nother level of, like, well, it's a whole nother level of continuation of something that has always happened around Star Trek. And I touched on this a little bit before, but Star Trek is famous for breaking the mold every time a new series launches. So when the original series launched, it's historic in the sense that it's one of the few series that was ever given a second pilot. The first pilot was not well received by the network, and so they asked for a second pilot. That doesn't happen. That's not something that happens.
No.
When Star Trek the Motion Picture was being created, it was actually originally starting out as a television show called Star Trek Phase 2. And then Star Wars happened, and the networks realized we need to go into movies. And so all of a sudden, Star Trek became a gateway for Paramount to get into sci-fi movies. When Star Trek The Next Generation launched, and I'm almost done here, when Star Trek The Next Generation launched, it was Paramount's first attempt to go directly to the affiliates and sell television shows directly to affiliates and not be distributed through a network. And it was a huge success for them. So when Star Trek Voyager launched, they actually launched it with their own television network called UPN. And that was the premier show, Voyager, for the UPN network. And so now here we are in 2017, and it's actually fairly appropriate that Star Trek Discovery is being used as the vehicle to launch CBS Access Online and really launch it. That's sort of almost in tradition now with Star Trek's history is the fans are used to drag them around to the different platforms that the studios now want to sort of infuse with life. And in some cases, it's been successful. So this may be successful. As an end user right now, I just am sick and tired of going to three or four different places to get my stuff.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
It feels like we're going so far backwards. Like, instead of having, you know, HTTP and HTML, we now, like, go to five different things. It's not that any of them, like, okay, maybe, like, the big players, Netflix, YouTube, like, they might have some stuff that they do different. But all these little guy streamers, like, they're pretty much doing the same thing. I wish there was some sort of standard or just open source framework. Like, sure, add whatever you need on top. Obviously, you need a little bit of DRM and authentication. Sure, that's fine. But if we could just standardize that? Because having to learn...
Why not just sell them? Just sell them through Amazon, Netflix, Google, Apple.
Yeah, I'll buy an episode. That's not the problem.
Yeah, just sell them. Don't launch your own streaming service.
Yeah, I think a lot of the shows that aren't on CBS All Access, like a lot of the Disney stuff, even though they're starting their own streaming service, you can buy those.
I think that's changing, though. Once the streaming service launches, there was some announcement about them pulling out. But either way, my point is, it was not as bad as I expected. However, that said, it's still a little bit of a disappointment. You know what I mean? But the show, separate thing, show is worth watching. So if you haven't checked it out yet, it is worth watching.
All right. I mean, when was the last time we had a new Star Trek released? Right. This doesn't happen every day.
No, yeah. All right, yeah.
I'm taking the tactic of waiting until this half season ends and watching it all at once.
Yeah, I'd say if you're not in a rush, that's a really good
call. Self-control is admirable over there, Beardsley.
Yeah, they've introduced a really interesting new sci-fi concept for travel, and I would really like to know where it's going, and I wish I could watch 3 or 4 episodes ahead now to know if they give you any info.
It's a lot easier to have a Star Trek self-control because, you know, the last two series sucked.
Oh. All right, so hashtag ask Air. What do we take for granted that's effing amazing if you really stop and think about it? I have one on the top of my head because it's my go-to.
The internet?
Sure.
Yeah, well, definitely.
Yeah. TCP/IP. Actually. You know what? But you know what actually always is my go-to? Is burgers.
Yeah.
The burger, and this is not, I'm not the one that came up with this. The burger is a remarkable representation of a meal that we couldn't have even had 150 years ago. Because it takes the grain to be milled and farmed for the bread, the cows to be raised and butchered and trimmed for the burger, the mustard seeds to be grown and smashed up, and the ketchup tomatoes to be, like, all of this stuff has to be created individually and then packaged up in a way where it remains good and edible in transit and then delivered to a place where you can get it and assemble it or go to a restaurant and they assemble it. And none of it, like if the restaurant or you had to do all of that in totality on your own, you would never have burgers.
Well, you might have burgers like once a year because you slaughter a cow.
Yeah, you slaughter after you slaughtered the cow and you've harvested the mustard seed and you've harvested the tomatoes and you've made the
But then you eat so many burgers, you get the meat sweats and it's just.
And what if you want bacon? And what if you want onion? And what if you want mayonnaise? Are you gonna raise the pigs and the eggs?
But to have a burger, you're giving up your milk.
Right. Yeah, that's true. So if you think about it, the burger is really a remarkable convenience that we have today. And I don't know, like there's so many things in life that we are standing on the shoulders of so many layers of giants that we can't even conceptualize the amount of effort that goes behind every single thing that we consume today.
Well, not only that, but it's amazing in another way because like every step of that process you mentioned is us like cultivating and changing the animals and the plants to give maximum output.
Right.
Like there's not like milk cows roaming the planet.
Right. They don't just naturally always continuously produce milk. That's by our engineering in one method or another. Yeah, it is fascinating.
It's funny how those like giant supply chains can all just exist, and if you aren't a part of them, you don't see it.
Appreciate electricity for a moment. The next time you plug something in, and think about how that electricity is coming from one continuous connection from the source it is being generated or stored to the wall outlet. That is an unbreakable chain and if it ever does break, the current stops. And it is continuous from the outlet in your wall all the way back to where the power is coming
from. I mean, pretty thin wire, too. Like, it's not a huge... I mean, yes, it's, like, long and there's a lot of infrastructure, but it's amazing that works at all.
We just have that stuff run through everything these days.
We go from rushing water to you playing Race the Sun.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, like, when the power's out, can you do anything? I mean, okay, you have time to catch up on that book you wanted to read, but that 6 hours later...
Right.
What do you do?
Well, that's when you have the other amazing invention we have is our mobile power generating.
I actually think literacy, in a sense, is up there, too. Like, the fact that we have a common dialogue in which we can exchange ideas is pretty empowering to the human race. And then
on the flip side of that, I would like to say that it's kind of amazing that
it's also one of our
literacy rate is so low.
Yeah. Also, air conditioning.
Yeah.
Thank the universe for air conditioning. When I was in New York, I've never had to do this before because I've been in places that were hotter. But when I was in New York, we would jump into stores just to cool down.
Wow.
Because it was so brutally hot and wet that you could walk for like 10 minutes and then there was no break. There's like no shade, you know, so you just would have to stop. And I was so appreciative for air conditioning. It was really the modern marvel.
I was going to say a washing machine because, like, let's be honest here. We're all probably lazy enough that it's hard enough to like actually go do your laundry when you have machines to do it. Would you ever do it if you had to go down to the river and like scrub things by hand? You'd buy new clothes,
maybe.
Be naked. I don't know.
Or how about refrigeration?
Yeah. Really, all of these things that we like running water to our homes. I don't actually don't have that at the moment. So,
yeah, so you know what that's like. Basically, and it sucks.
I think our list is everything invented in the past 150 years.
Yeah. Well, and what's the biggest new food that's been discovered or created or cultivated by humans in the last 100 years?
Sous vide.
But no, like a new food, we might grow more avocados or we might grow more kale. Well, but like we're not like
the problem is
nothing's changed in the last 100 years.
The problem is we're not going to find any more new foods on this planet because all the things we find now are endangered, so we can't eat them. Mm-hmm. So we have to go to another planet and harvest their food.
We are about to have those non-browning apples.
That's true. That's true.
That's genetics. Not new, but... Yeah.
Okay. Patreon.com/JupiterSignal. I don't know if you've heard the news, but we're working on some improvements to Linux Unplugged. We just talked about it in episode 218 of the Unplugged
program. I got my hammer and saw out, Chris.
Yeah. We're going to be doing some renovating, and we need our patron support. Put the beard to work at patreon.com/JupiterSignal and help us bring Linux Unplugged up to a new level of competitiveness at the same time. Because that's what we do there, is we sort of use that funding to build runway for new shows, expansion of shows, or crazy trips to New York, something like that, where it always adds to the content. It creates like a sort of like a weight for Jupiter Broadcasting where we're pulled towards the audience. And that's one of the things I love about crowdfunding.
I think one of the things I like about JB too is that when we improve one show, we use stuff that will eventually probably improve all the shows.
Mm-hmm. Skills learned. We come back and we apply to all. Which is kind of what we're in the middle of right now. And we could use your help. Patreon.com/JupiterSignal. All right, so this next one's personally extremely hard for me, so please don't make fun of me. I was a geek growing up, #AskError. What is the most embarrassing belief you used to have? And I blame mine. I'll go mine. This is brutally honest. I blame sex ed. It wasn't something I came to on my own, but it was an impression that it was given to me over a couple of years during different sex ed courses, and that was that girls don't like sex. Only boys like sex, and girls end up having sex to make boys happy or because you've compromised them in some way. And so I actually bought into that for a while and then would meet women after I got out of school who liked sex and thought, like, what is wrong with you? What does it matter? Like, you're not supposed to like – and then I would meet another one that liked – and I thought, so that's how we reproduce. Men and women both like sex. Oh, I see. That's how we keep banging it, because they both sides want to do it. It's not just dudes who are horn dogs. You can have women who are horn dogs, too. That's actually a thing that can exist.
Equal horn dog opportunity up in here.
Yeah. But when I was a kid, like back in like, you know, middle school and early high school, later high school, I figured this out. But early high school, just... totally misunderstood.
Well, there's definitely cultural elements there too, right? Like there's a lot of shame and other sort of purity associated with women, whereas like boys, like, well, you don't want kids, so but keep it in your pants,
boys,
kid. But there's
boys.
Yeah, there's an understanding of that.
Yeah,
fair or not.
But I felt so stupid because it, like, I missed a couple of opportunities.
I was going to say you're hurting yourself here. Yeah.
So that was really, it's like, oh shit, what is? And then like I would revisit stuff in my mind. I was like, oh, I totally made the wrong assumption there. I'm glad I figured it out, but. Boy, I felt dumb. So that would be mine. I don't know if you guys, if you have, like, the most embarrassing belief that you used to have that you no longer have.
I feel like I've said most of those on the show already.
Probably. Fine, I'll just hang myself out there. That's fine.
Well, on the flip side, Chris, you can think of it in a positive way. You had that belief, and because of that belief, you missed those opportunities. But because you missed those opportunities, you're where you are now, and you're happy.
It's deep, Rikai. That's super deep. All right. #AskAir. I don't think I have one anymore. I think that was my last one. Dang. I was like, let's move on. You guys didn't have any answers. But
I'm trying to think of one. I could not, though.
I know. Okay, so that's not all ours. So I know we have some more. But if you want to get your question into the show, I should mention right now, tweet us. Just any tweet. You don't have to tweet us at anything specifically. Just put your tweet out there and then do #AskError. And you can also drop that in Telegram or Discord, and we will try to grab them. And then we collate your questions. And we use them as fodder here on this show, because often you guys come up with things.
There's a great big machine. It combines them and manipulates them.
Using machine learning and artificial intelligence with a dynamic training set. Last.ting.com. What is Ting? It's a smarter way to do mobile. Last.ting.com is where you go for wireless, where you pay for what you use, nationwide coverage, no contracts, no early termination fees, no quote-unquote service commitments. You just pay for what you use. Minutes, messages, and megabytes. Whatever you use, boom. That's what you pay for. Do you get it? It's simple.
Wait, do I have to pay for what you use?
No, what you use.
Oh, that's perfect.
Hey. I know.
Hey, Chris, you might actually see my phone bill be above $6 a month.
Oh, yeah?
I've actually been making some phone calls on Ting.
I'll prepare myself for this. Yeah, so it's $6 for the line, and then just whatever you use on top of that. Normally, Beardsley here is on the Wi-Fi. So am I. I'm a Wi-Fi fiend. That's what we call it. Wi-Fi fiend. I'm part of the Wi-Fi squad. I came up with that. They can run with that. Obviously,
you've got a sweatshirt, a badge.
I wouldn't be surprised if I have wireless cancer. That's all I'll say.
Yeah, okay, very good. Now, Ting has devices that you can buy directly, or you can bring your own device. And I'm just going to put a mention out there. You like yourself the headphone port? Maybe you're a bit of a Samsung skeptic, but you want to play in the Android field? Friends, good news. The LG G6 is now in stock over at Ting. But of course, if you have a CDMA or a GSM device, you can likely bring it to Ting. Just check their BYOD page. Just go to last.ting.com to get started and get $25 off a device.
You know what, Chris? I'm going to hazard a guess. This is not confirmed. I'm going to guess that the recently funded Libra 5 will be able to be used on Ting.
Yeah, they're pretty, you know, Ting will just sell you a SIM card. They're pretty easy about that kind of thing. I love it.
As long as it's got the right bands, you're good.
That's all you need. Last.ting.com. All right. Beardsley, I've asked a few. Do you have a couple you want to toss my way? Let's see if we can't embarrass me some more.
Well, first, there is one from the Discord.
Okay.
If you could go back in time and give somebody one electronic device from today in an attempt to boost technological advancement, knowing that whatever you give them will shape the direction of tech in general, what would you give them?
You'd have to get it just right.
Because if Emacs.
You can't say a smartphone.
That's too magic.
And it doesn't have any. There's no supporting services. Right. And Emacs, you'd have to have. You know, you'd have to give them a computer. Basically.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even if you didn't have the supporting services of a smartphone, though, it would still be a handheld computer.
Yeah. Yeah, but I feel like a Raspberry Pi might be actually more useful than like a smartphone.
Yeah.
Because Raspberry Pi, you can see how it works. You could install software on it. The only problem is you wouldn't have HDMI. So you'd have to come back with like an HDMI to VGA adapter because it depends on how far back you're going. But that would be the tricky part is how do they get online, all of that stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Maybe like a video player and a big library.
Yeah.
I was going to say like, or like a giant encyclopedia or like here's the science we know.
About like Wikipedia or YouTube?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Like on a huge offline data set. What about that? What were you going to say, Beard?
Well, they said they were thinking of something like a ThinkPad to push forward laptops with a focus on modularity or an iPhone to push smartphones with a focus on thinness and ease of use.
Did you ever see the episode of Star Trek Voyager where aliens crash on the planet and they basically bring microchip technology to Earth?
Yeah.
And this guy like uses it to like advance his company?
Yeah. Wasn't that actually the Ferengi?
No, there was a Ferengi. I'm thinking of this one. It's in California, and they go back to the 90s, and this guy gets a microchip, and
it's where the doctor's mobile emitter comes from.
Yes, yep, exactly. Yes, you know what I'm talking about.
Oh yeah.
So this is what I'm picturing when we talk about this, and I think a laptop is the way to go. The more I think about it, not a phone, not a Raspberry Pi.
What about a graphing calculator so that technology stagnates forever and never advances because that's how they
like
work.
A sabotage maneuver.
Yeah.
But by doing so, we avoid like the techno dystopia that we are hurling towards.
Yeah, right, exactly.
So I mean, it's like you stunt the growth of our technology.
They get some. They're not using abacuses anymore.
Right.
But
you save us at the right moment.
Yeah. They'll be on those black and white tiny screens
for
years.
What if that actually happened? What if that really had happened? Would we really be that much worse off? I don't think we would be. We wouldn't have as much entertainment options as we have now, but I think that actually maybe be a good thing.
Right. I mean, it's a fair question. Are we happier now than simpler times?
All access.
We wouldn't have echoes, and we wouldn't have voice assistants, and we wouldn't have
podcasts.
Maybe not, but you would have pirate radio. Yeah. You would have self-published magazines still.
Some tapes.
So there would still be independent media of some form. I almost wonder if things wouldn't. I'm sure that must be the curmudgeon in me coming out because the options and new things that connectivity gives us are truly changing humanity.
You're sounding a little bit too much like Noah.
Yeah.
But I do wonder, like, if West could have been successful.
Who's to say I won't yet, my friends?
That's true. Okay, that was a good one. I like that. Do you have any closures on that?
Yeah, I want to take a different tack at answering it. Technology doesn't necessarily mean hardware. So what if we brought, like, the Linux kernel back to the 50s?
Whoa. So by doing that, you would be bringing, assuming they knew what to do with it, you would be bringing concepts of virtualization, networking, memory management, file systems that would be years beyond anything they'd ever seen.
Yeah.
But you would have to have a way, so it couldn't just be the kernel. It would have to, again, be like a laptop running the Linux kernel.
I don't know. I feel like
open source would be
the thing. Or just a big printout.
That would be the
Microfiche, I think that was popular back then.
Sure. But if you were going to, like, whatever you do, whatever you bring back, make it open source. Because if you think about it, they're going to need all of the code to go through that and deconstruct how that thing works. And if it's something closed proprietary, that's going to be way less useful.
Bring back an entire distro. Yeah. So they can just reverse engineer it, essentially.
You remember Endless? Endless, and they're doing, like, everything is, like, preloaded offline. It's like a Linux distro where Wikipedia and a lot of website content's already offline. That would be the thing. Yeah. That would be it. Imagine if Linux had gotten started in the 50s or 60s, and even if there was nothing to run it on, by the time the technology caught up, and it may have encouraged people to build faster because they knew what to build towards. They might have known what the goal was to get to. Jesus, it would be unstoppable.
Yeah, if you took back like a distro, you would get so much stuff. You would have like a super advanced version of C.
Well, and GPL would be the de facto standard. Like you would be odd not to be GPL licensed.
Yeah, I was thinking kind of the reverse. Like if we took FreeBSD 11 and just plopped it on Linus's desk back when he was a student. Like, here you go. This is what you wanted. Runs on 386, man.
That's a dark future.
And Wes sabotages the cloud. There was no cloud.
Nope. Well, because it's all in jails. It's fine.
I like this. You are a rogue element today, Wes.
On the other hand, everything would be on ZFS.
Okay. Damn it. All right. That was one submitted by Discord. Do we have any more? I'm good. These are good ones this week.
I got...
Thank you guys.
I don't know if this is good or not, but it caught my eye. What is something that is acceptable if you are unattractive, but not if you are attractive, or the reverse of that?
Oh, I like that. So something that is acceptable...
I don't know which way is better, but some permutation.
I notice people who are attractive tend to be flirtier, just more openly flirtier. Like especially people in like the service industry,
mm-hmm.
baristas or something like that. Boy, I gotta mold that. Do you have an example of something that's acceptable when you're a little more attractive versus something that's?
I was trying to think about the opposite actually. Like, what can you get away with if you're unattractive but not attractive?
Well, I from personal experience, I can say sometimes like you might have somebody that gives like a public talk, and then afterwards an attractive female will come up and flirt a little more than she might have if you were unattractive. Is potentially that could be something that happens.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you were like up there like a monster, she might have just walked out afterwards. Theoretically, if you were this person.
No, I guess it depends on how much money you're making.
Yeah, that is a good point. I feel like it's mostly social stuff. I feel like it's mostly social interactions.
Yeah, definitely.
And maybe certain like social graces people might be willing to extend you. Stuff that's totally unfair and not really, really.
Stuff that might get you inroads in certain places.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's a good one. I'd like to hear the audiences on that one.
I would too.
I feel like we're missing a good one on that. So you can also respond with hashtag Ask Air. Just make it clear that you're not asking us something, that you're responding, because people do send in feedback with that too. All right, do we have any others for the segment?
There's another from Discord.
Okay, bring it in.
Asking, what are some of the most eye rolling and head smacking instances of PebCAC that you've ever experienced over the years, either relating to yourself or someone else?
Well, probably my favorite is when I was first getting into IT, a big part of what I was doing was teaching adults that were much older than me how to use mice. Adults that are now about my age.
Chris.
God. But yeah, they had no idea how to use the mouse, no idea between right, left click. They didn't know what hand to put it in. And I had to instruct these.
It goes in the pants, obviously.
How many of those people used the mouse upside down?
It happened. It definitely did happen. And so I was probably 19, 20, and teaching these 35, 40, 45-year-olds how to use a mouse. And they weren't super receptive to some kid teaching them how to use this thing to do their job. And so that was probably the most frustrating thing, because they not only did they not like it, because they were used to DOS systems, but they didn't like that it was coming from a kid. And so when I would have to be like, well, you're right clicking. And I wouldn't say it like mean. I'd just be like, there's two mouse buttons here, and you have to make sure that they would not.
Well, the solution there, Chris, you just put them on a Mac, single button.
Legitimately, the solution was is I redeployed Solitaire via group policy and let people start playing Solitaire, and that fixed the problems.
Boom,
that
was done. And nothing got done ever again.
Video games solve everything.
So for yourself, is it a self-inflicted wound, or do you have like a tech support story?
I actually can't think of one right now.
Oh, there must be some with all the people you've helped with tech support issues. There must be some. I bet there's even some just with
Noah. I feel like maybe... probably.
probably
I feel like I've been so traumatized that I've blocked them off.
Yeah, yeah. You get stuck doing tech support stuff.
I've certainly done plenty of it. Someone just the other day was in charge of administrating a system, trying to give access to it for a new hire or vendor or something. Instead of making them a new account, they created a copy of their own account that somehow shadowed them. So they made themselves a new account that they did not have access to, could not log into, and then could no longer log into their own account.
Oh, jeez.
Yes.
That's like.
And of course, like so many people who just don't, they have no idea how like a file system works or what that conception is. I'm not sure iOS has helped with that very much for people who are like mobile tablet first. And then, so like, how many people have you seen just they don't know where their files are? They don't know where they've saved them. You're like, it's right there. Or they think they're saving them to their USB drive and they're not at all.
Let me
all
ask you guys this legitimately, because that is a problem that honestly I thought was understandable back when I was teaching people how to use mice. And I really legitimately thought that by now we would understand what a file system is. We would understand that we should be saving our files in our home directory. There's a documents folder, a music folder, a downloads folder. And with all the love in the world, my own mother, who is a graphic artist by trade, works on the computer all day when she's doing that.
Can I pause you, Chris?
Mm-hmm.
How clean is her desktop? Like the desktop screen.
It tends to be a workspace. It tends to be very cluttered. And then she tends to have everything in the root of her home directory.
Mm-hmm.
Everything's just in the root. Lots of folders, lots of files with crazy characters.
That way it's all alphabetized and you can just go down the list.
And then every now and then, like, I'll go to her hard drive. You know, I'll go, like, dig around her hard drive and I'll just find, like, some folder on the root directory. Outside, like, where somehow she's made a folder in her root directory and she's got a bunch of stuff in there. And so it's outside the backup scheme. And my mom is a smart woman and she uses the computer to do her job. And yet she has still, after, I don't know, like 25 years, not been bothered to learn what the file system is.
I think that's part. I mean, there may be a lot of reasons for it, but my father is a self-affirmed Luddite. So he was kind of in a similar position. He worked in retail book buying and selling. So he used his computer to like order trade, you know, books from publishers, that kind of thing. He could use it as a tool just fine, but wasn't going beyond email. Now he wasn't going beyond. And having some conversations with him, teaching a little bit about the terminal command line, there's a lot of people who just like they never got a fundamentals of computing or working with it.
Just,
and like,
they had to jump into the deep end.
Like, has anyone, I mean, I don't know about your mom, but in general, like, I think there's some people that, like, just showing a file system tree or like at some point in their early learning, a couple exercises where they have to go retrieve a file.
Some people are receptive to that.
Yes, not everyone.
Especially like when you're trying to teach people how to save to like the network drives in a corporate environment, that's where they're more receptive to it.
Yeah.
But I find that they're less receptive when it's their own personal machines. And then they just don't give two Fs.
They don't want to be bothered with
it. And so my question to you guys is, for all intents and purposes, from a user perspective, is it time for the file system to go away? Like, obviously, it's still there on the back end. That's how the operating system will manage files. But does iOS and Android, if you use it in default mode, do they have it right? Is it time for the file system to go away and just for applications to be aware of what applications can open what and send files around? And to present the files in a way that doesn't matter where you store them, what folder they're in, if they're in the right spot to be backed up, like the system just manages all of that. Really, it seems like if you're going to design a computer system today, that's how you would design it. You wouldn't even let the users screw up the file system because it's too perfect. It's too important.
No, I don't agree. I find that when I use Android, I find myself getting frustrated a lot and installing like third-party file managers because...
Do you?
Because I'm looking for, you know, certain files and you can only access them via certain apps and then those apps only have the ability to send to certain other apps. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I just want a file that I can take and put where I want it.
Yeah. So I think there is merit in a reduced complexity interaction or standards or, you know, shareability. Because I think like maybe the notion of a file or an object, yes, tied in with cloud storage so that it's always there, yes.
Right.
But I think what Beard is hitting on, I've run into that many times too, without an escape hatch or a more general sort of like, I can, maybe it's not a file system, but maybe you just have one flat folder of things and like I can put that there. I know then I can tell VLC to open it.
Yep. You know, I got to say, me too. One of the reasons why at the end of the day, when nothing else works, I always go back to Kodi is because I know I can hook up a USB stick to my Android TV. I can launch Kodi. I can browse the file system and I can play the file. So I'm 100% on board with you guys. But, you know, I look at the situation we're facing and we are not the majority. Unfortunately, the way we use computers does not seem to drive the way that computers are built anymore.
Do you think that you're just maybe being overly critical of how people arrange their files? Because I feel
I feel like it's coming, Rikai. I feel like this is coming, and the next major commercial desktop OS will do away with the file browser.
You mean TrueOS?
No, I mean like if macOS reboots as an ARM platform or Windows 11 launches or something like that, like it's the next commercial major OS. Well, look at Chrome OS, really. You know, and here's why. Because where do you blur the line between cloud storage and local storage when everything's cached and synced? And you're not going to have directories and files on cloud storage providers, on your Google Drives, your iClouds, your Dropboxes. I mean, you will get representations of them. But they're really database entries that they're representing as a file system.
Exactly. And especially like where you want more, like it won't be so strict, right? We'll get some of those things we want, like tagged, be able to view like multiple files in one folder type view.
Yeah. I think that's the way it's going, is more like what your Google Drive looks like and less like what your file system looks like.
You know what? I actually kind of hate that.
Yeah.
Like, for example, LAN is given to me via Google Drive.
Yeah.
I cannot, for the life of me, figure out how to find the LAN folder unless I use the search.
I bookmark it. That's what I do. You know, and everything's a URL. So that's the plus side, is you can bookmark the URL, but that's where we're going. We're going to a future where files are all URLs.
Yeah.
And, I don't know about that. I really don't know about that. That's what I'm going to be. I'll be living with my Linux.
Yeah, you can pry it out of our cold, dead hands.
Mm-hmm. I kind of relate to the people that just scatter their files everywhere, because that's exactly what I do.
Really?
Yeah.
You monster.
Why? I know
you
where everything
keep
is.
In your home directory, right?
No, it's all over the place.
No. Like, you got it, like, on your C drive, on the root of your C drive?
Yeah. I have, like,
under slash user
there.
Just...
Animal! Really?
Why? Why is the root of the drive this sanctuary?
I'm not saying I don't put stuff on the root of my drive, but, like, my data goes in my home directory, and, like, what I do is I make home directory my root.
See,
so I have a bin folder in my home directory, I have a log folder in my home directory, and anything I install, I make it right to there, and I keep it all there so that way I can wipe my OS and I just have my home directory with all my stuff.
Well, first of all, the problem with Windows is there is no home directory.
It's just documents and settings and whatever
which is like this weird virtual folder that doesn't actually exist on the file system.
Yeah, I don't really understand.
but like I have tons of things in the root directory because it's just another directory. You just put stuff where you think you'll remember it. It just makes sense to me.
Yeah. I as long as you know where it's all at, that's what matters.
Exactly.
If you can get to it, and then you can back it up.
Definitely matters more like if you're in a shared user environment. If it's just your machine, then like,
whatever. That's where some of my bias comes from, is years and years of setting up shared user directories and network
sure
drives. Yeah. Hey-o!
All right, I got a couple.
Really, dude?
I got a couple options.
Like this. No, it's good. Keep them coming.
Okay. This one's maybe a downturn. We don't want to do it. I don't know. What disturbs you the most about yourself? That could also be like your biggest flaw or something you're working on right now.
Oh, man.
The other one, which is like, again, you could take it one of either way. What popular trend needs to end, or what societal norm should make a comeback?
Jeez, those are three really good ones. Well, okay, so let's start with the first one. The first one was,
what disturbs you the most about yourself?
Recently, my willingness to take risks.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I feel like I may be taking far too many risks.
You bad boy, Rikai.
Yeah, look at you. That's pretty impressive. That's like a good problem. I mean, until it bites you or you have a terrible thing, which is always possible.
Yeah, that's why it's terrifying, because I'm sure it's going to bite me in the ass at some point.
Yeah. What about you, Wes? You got anything that...
Yeah, well, I think mine is the... I don't know that it's... Right now, I'm doing okay at it, but in general, I have a pretty good default happy state. And so it's pretty easy for me to be okay with what's going on. So while in general, I do like to, like, you know, pursue bigger and better things, improve myself, all of those things, it's pretty... Even if what I'm doing sucks, I will be happy, and it can be a very dangerous trap.
I see what you're saying there. So it's easy to sort of stagnate a bit.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, you give me a cheap Linux laptop, a TV, some books.
Coffee.
All right, I'm fine. Yeah, some coffee. Yeah, naturally.
I think the thing that scares me about myself the most is sometimes I am laying the groundwork for something that's going to fuck me so hard down the road, and I have no idea at the time that I'm doing it. And it's like, it seems like a great idea, or it seems like the right person to hire, or it seems like the perfect thing to do, or the right thing to buy, or the right move to make, or whatever it could be. You know, insert your random ass thing here. I have no idea at the time of knowing if this isn't the very thing that's going to blow up, or maybe some partnership with a friend at some point, or, you know, something like, you never really know. It's just any of these things at some point can be like the very thing that ends up being the thorn in your side that steals momentum from your progress.
I may or may not see like three or four of those things in this room.
Are you looking at that GNOME desktop right now?
A little bit.
Damn it. That was a good one. Okay, so there was a second one there.
Oh,
boy,
yeah.
These are good this week. I'm liking this.
What popular trend needs to end immediately, and what societal norm should make a comeback?
Okay, so the popular trend one, Washington, that I feel like...
Washington needs to end?
No, there's one in Washington that's... We are so hung up on the Seahawks here. 12 everything.
Yes.
The 13th fan or whatever the hell. Like, 12th fan, I guess. It's just everywhere. It's people have flags on their vehicles. It's every business. It's do you agree? Like, it's
oh,
just,
yeah.
It's super
tons
intense.
Of people at my office wear jerseys, which I don't care. Like, dress what you want. I'm not a stickler for dress.
It's
but
just,
it's just...
It's starting to feel tribal. And it's the same thing. It's the same kind of buttons that scare me, like when we have a terrorist attack or a mass shooting and then people lose their common sense shit and we pass things like the Patriot Act. And it's like, holy shit, how did the land of the home and the brave and a country with a constitution pass a Patriot Act? Oh, well, we were scared shitless. We did something that we were very scared. If something happened, we were very scared. So we made a crazy step. It's the same thing with like this allegiance to a sports team that is a gimmick to sell you stuff.
Well, just think about it. Like, there's actual news articles about how when certain sports teams lose, the people from the stadium go and they friggin' riot.
Yeah.
They destroy things.
I say that, by the way, wishing I liked sports ball a lot more, because I feel like that'd be a fun thing to do. What about you? What do you think about a societal norm that needs to change?
I think there needs to be no
or
more
trend,
hipsters.
I guess, trend.
No more hipsters, Chris?
There will no longer be any hipsters as soon as people stop defining people as hipsters. It's as simple as that.
Ooh, wow.
Yeah, but the people that used to be hipsters will still exist.
Wow. Okay, and then there was a third one there. What was it? The third one
was... What societal norm should make a comeback?
Yeah, so that was the trend, societal norm that should make a comeback.
Yeah.
A comeback.
Now, can you define societal norm?
I got one.
I think trend, I mean, yeah. I think it's pretty open. I was just going to say, I wish we would all wear more hats. Hats are great. They're a
good
lot of fun.
Call, dude.
But you kind of stand out now. Not that that's bad, but you know what
right.
I mean? Like,
right.
And there's not
especially
common knowledge about hats. There's not, it's not part of the culture, really.
Right. There's
except
really, there's
baseball
no hat,
caps.
There's no hat culture in Seattle. There's a little more hat culture in New York, I noticed.
Yeah. The South has a little
mm-hmm.
more. Yeah.
But nothing here. And the thing is, it rains all the time here.
So, yeah, right.
Being a Washington transplant, I missed the original wave of this. Can we bring back grunge music?
Oh, yeah?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, but then you're bringing back flannel, too, so...
I mean, did it ever leave?
No, it didn't. No, it didn't, I suppose
just
not.
Just stuck there in the crevices and the dark places of the city.
You know what I would like to see as a trend that comes back? This could never happen unless we had some sort of huge collapse. But what I would like to see is when my grandpa was growing up, he described about how essentially the town was self-sustaining. Like the town of Aberdeen, Washington could be lifted up and on its own island, and it would still function essentially the same way it functioned here in the middle of Washington, because they had local farmers, they had local teachers, everybody, there was just sort of this self-sustaining small a group of small businesses, and of course you had a plant which was a major employer, and everybody knew each other, and so you didn't have the kind of acts of horrible violence that we have now. And you didn't have the disassociation that people have with everyone around them. And you didn't have the sort of passive-aggressive, awkward interactions that people have on the streets when they bump into each other accidentally, because it was, everybody was all in. You had to participate in the total collective. And so by doing so, everybody was sort of being part of the same group. They were all part of the same common collective. And it made for a real true community, one that supported each other. And I know that sounds sort of out there and whatnot, but it just seems ridiculous with technology that we have where you could hyper-localize social networks. And you see it spring up a little bit. Like Facebook has these community buy nothing pages, mm-hmm. where there's a little bit of this beginning to happen where social network with location and whatnot can bring groups together. But it feels like instead of technology separating people, it could be enabling people, especially mobile technology. And we've just not seen it happen yet. And so instead, it's a worldwide conversation constantly about crazy-ass shit that Trump says, or the stupid-ass way that a celebrity did something, or this conversation that we're having is so detached from what's actually in our local lives and impacting us day-to-day where we live, that I think we have a total lack of sense of community. And if we could localize that a bit more, if we could use technology to expose what's going on around us and connect people, I think we'd have stronger communities, and I think we'd have less horrible violent outbreaks. And I think people, by nature, are social animals that are designed to be in packs. And when these connections are stronger, people tend to be emotionally healthier, families tend to be stronger, and diversive issues like race and gender and sexual orientation fade away, and class differences fade away, and a community infrastructure is created in its place. And I think people would be a lot happier. But what happened, and that seems to be a trend that we're very far away from actually reversing at this point, because it just, the conversation seems to be getting wider and more global and more divisive all the time.
You know what's interesting? We kind of did have that at a point back when AOL was around, because they had like the local community chats.
Reddit can do it. Like there's a Seattle subreddit,
yeah,
which is, you know, not bad. And there's other subreddits for other cities, but...
Well, the problem is like, you have to know that exists and go there.
Yeah.
And you have to seek it out, too.
Yeah. It'd be nice, right, if you could get, like, some kind of ISP-supplied landing page for your local community or something.
Like a news group
based
of some kind.
On your address.
Like some sort of Usenet.
So, I feel like all of us are, on some level, going through some kind of stuff right now. So, what is currently your biggest problem in life right now?
Oh, boy.
That is a weighty question.
Do you want a top five list or just the top one? Just the top one?
Top five is fine if you think you can get through them all pretty quick.
No, I won't do that. I was just kidding. Probably money, because all of the other things,
yeah,
like I need new tires, I need new brakes, I need work done on my truck, I need to turn water on at the junkyard. All these things cost money, and if I had a little more money, I could probably get more things done. I feel like I have a lot of other problems, but that's the one that seems to be the most stressing me right now.
And may cause a lot of the other problems.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm getting worried about, I've been putting off, when I bought my truck, it was starting to need new tires, and that was 2 years ago. So I've been putting it off for a long time,
yeah,
because truck tires are expensive.
And then those things come due and you're like, ugh.
But now like I got pieces coming off, like the outside of the tire, like little pieces of rubber are coming off. I'm like, okay, yep.
It is time.
I'm one of those people now who has tires that are actually falling apart. Okay, so I'm going to go Thursday. I'm going in to get a quote to see how much it's going to cost. I'm not looking forward to that. So,
no.
Yeah, that's a big problem right now for me, is trying to increase revenue in a way that doesn't mean like adding a whole bunch of sponsors or creating clickbait content.
This is brought to you by Jim's Tire Service, though, so FYI.
Or also needing to hire someone else to do these additional things, which will actually lower the revenue.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So I know, Wes, when I think of you, I think, man, some days you seem like you're so busy. Like, at least with us, you're podcasting all the time these days. You're living down in Seattle. You got the job.
Yeah.
What's your problem? What's Wes? What's the pain
of
Wes pain?
Time is definitely a big one. There's just a lot going on. Time and focus. I feel like I'm interested in, like, 1,000 different things right now, several of which I'm very passionate about. My life is filled with mostly good things, but also some things that are less passionate about or just take up a lot of time. So I'm really trying to figure out, like, what are the essentials? What do I actually need? And will, like, make me the most happy and give the best output to the world.
It's a good thing to be thinking about.
Yeah, it's a good problem to have. I'm thankful for that.
There can be a stage where you're like, okay, well, these are the things I'm still having to do, and I'm really sick and tired of doing these things, and these can bring me down, and I know these are the things I want to be doing.
Yeah, exactly.
So that can be a phase that can be really hard to get through.
Yeah. It's a journey, that's for sure.
It is, yeah. I feel you. I feel you on that. Well, thank you for spending some of that valuable time with us recently.
Oh, I am so glad
to. You've been a podcast machine.
Woo!
You really
helped out. We're a team. You can tell Wes is busy because sometimes you send him a message and he responds 18 hours later.
That does happen.
Yeah, that's true. Beardsley, the list is long for you, but I say avoid PC hardware and give me a biggest problem in your world right now.
Well, first, I'm going to cheat, and I'm going to steal all of your answers and say those are all of my problems. Money, time, focus.
Yeah.
So to start with the money, you know, I apparently in the next 6 months need to figure out how to move two people and come up with like $100,000.
Well, that should be pretty easy. Yeah. Okay. So
sell the two people.
We got to unpack that because I'm not. I don't want people to think I'm kicking you out or something.
No.
So two people, you, and another person.
No. Me and two other people.
You, and two other people.
Correct.
In one place.
Correct.
You and two other people, and one of them is a human. Is the other one a human?
Two humans.
Are they both women?
Yes.
Oh, I could see how this is a problem. Oh, man, Rikai. All right.
So, Chris,
we got to unpack this a little bit.
Okay.
You and two women in an apartment.
In an apartment.
In a relationship.
Correct.
That is a complicated thing. Now, how much of this is on you to raise the funds to make this happen?
It's a collective thing.
Okay.
That's good.
You know,
also more complicated.
Yeah. That boy. Wow. Okay. So you are going to move in with two women into a place and you're going to try to pull it off in the next 6 months.
Yep. Remember that whole thing about how I said I may take too many risks?
And these people are not, like, they're not here to help right now. Like, they're not next door.
So, hello, Internet. I'm polyamorous.
Well, here we go. Well. That deserves a bell. What else deserves a bell today? I think that's the number one thing. So, both of these ladies, you are in a relationship with, and have been for a little while.
Yep.
And so the time has come to move in together.
Correct.
I don't know if you've caught this, but sometimes it's difficult to live with one other person, let alone two people. I mean, I don't know if you're aware of this.
Maybe I'm just a better person than you, Chris.
That is definitely possible.
It is possible. Definitely when it comes to living with other people.
I take care of one, the beard takes care of the other.
Oh! No!
Really, I'm two people.
That's true. That is a magnificent beard. It is that impressive.
Once you can teach it to edit for you, you'll be set.
I'll just take naps all day.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, so why 6 months? I mean, because, like,
that's a compressed timeline.
It feels like, yeah, that is a short amount of time to even find a place in Seattle, let alone raise the funds and move two people in, plus just three people.
Yeah, well, I guess I'm not including myself.
Yeah, so it's three people.
I should probably move with them.
Four with the beard.
And two pets. Three pets.
Oh,
pets.
That's a
five
whole...
pets.
Jeez.
Yeah, a dog and four cats.
Okay.
That's
a lot. That is a lot.
Yep.
That is a lot. Plus a beard.
Is there anything else we need to know here that complicates this?
Yeah.
Are you all felons?
I'm looking for a place that also has a finished basement in Seattle.
Sure.
So I can have a recording area to maybe, host some podcasts.
Produce content.
Yeah.
Naturally. Natch.
Maybe Wes won't have to travel up to the studio.
Wes could
studio
go to
South.
The Seattle Bureau.
Yeah.
JB2.
Yeah.
The winter studio.
Yeah, the JB2
well,
Seattle studio.
You're going south, so it'd be the summer studio.
Yeah, there we go.
Do you have a plan B if the Seattle aspect of this doesn't work out? Because that seems like the poly stuff, I can wrap my head around that. But the Seattle stuff.
I like how that's the easy part.
It is.
You're a catch. It's fine.
Yeah, the Seattle stuff, that seems like, woo.
I feel like the audience might be more interested in that first part.
Okay. All right. But okay. All right. Well, okay.
The Seattle stuff, no plan B.
Now, what's the matter, Rika? Was one not enough? Let's talk about this. Why two ladies? Because most of us are probably familiar with the traditional one lady or one fella, one lady model.
Right. A two-person partnership.
A two-person model, you might say. But not Beard. Nope.
And I guess we should clarify, too, is this
mold here.
You with two separate relationships, are they also romantically entwined?
Oh, yeah.
I'm not clear on that.
Oh, yeah. Is it considered a relationship of three people, or is it separate relationships?
It's separate.
Okay.
Oh.
But not because of any restrictions.
So they would be roommates, but not couples. Right.
It's up to them.
You're right.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I guess so. But at this current stage.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. And that probably makes sense, because if you're going to room with somebody, might as well room with a mutual friend, I suppose.
Yeah.
And if they trust you, you're like, well, he probably has good taste. He likes me, so.
Yeah. You know where my head goes is to the sex, because that's where I think, like, that's where that would be the angle you'd want to work. But I understand there's more to it than that. But that's where my head goes. It's like, well, how would I work this so that way everybody's on the same page sex-wise? You know what I'm saying?
That's actually relatively easy in my situation, because one of the people is asexual.
Oh, okay.
So they have no interest.
All right.
That keeps it simple.
And the other person is kind of extreme.
Enjoys the sex.
Yes.
Yeah. Remember how I said that mistake I made a long time ago when I was a kid?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It does seem interesting because there are a lot of, like, you know, there's a lot of different aspects to our relationship dynamic. There's a lot in terms of just support, partnership, help, people to talk with, share. And so, you know, if there's some aspects you get from some person and then filled elsewhere.
Right.
And, you know, at the same time, all these people are trying to live their own independent lives. And I know it can be pretty hard. Like, you don't have time for your spouse or significant other. You feel guilty. But if they have someone else that they can be with, maybe that makes it easier for you to develop your own life.
Yeah. And I think it just really is sort of like, how comfortable are you with the idea that when maybe you're having an off day, they can go with somebody else and have a great day too, possibly. Mm-hmm. So you have to really check your jealousy, I would imagine.
Yeah. The only real problem that I feel long-term might be an issue is trying to interface the fact that I have multiple partners with the current state of the world, like marriage benefits for one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You kind of have to, in the current model, you'd have to pick one partner and marry, which then sort of sets like this primary partner precedence.
Yep.
Which is sort of...
Have a rotational divorce. You get divorced every couple of years. You switch the primary partner. That's horrible.
I know the hand fasting is sort of like another like method of essentially marriage, but not a traditional marriage. So there's like other ways of doing that.
And something I do want to clarify. I am polyamorous. I am not a polygamist.
What's the difference?
Polygamists are people that just have multiple wives, and it's sort of a one man, many woman kind of thing.
Right. Like your what was that? There was an HBO show like that.
Yeah.
Uh huh. Okay. So that's which one?
That is polygamy.
Okay.
I am polyamorous, which just means I have feelings for multiple people.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. Do you guys have any questions?
It's not the first. You're not the first person I've met in this situation, so it's not particularly new to me. I think most of my questions would sort of.
He just wants the sex.
What are you worried about? Because, like, it changes when you move in with a person. The relationship changes, and that can be a lot of things to deal with one person. But with two people who are also not particularly familiar with each other as well.
Oh, they're actually fairly familiar with each other.
You know what I mean? Like, still, though. Like, it's too...
I could see it either being easier or more difficult.
Right, because you could all relate.
There's more energy in the house. It's not just one versus one.
Yeah.
But there's also, you have more roommates, and that can be difficult in and of itself.
And if anybody has any particulars about the way the house is, like, everybody has to adapt more so to that, more accommodating.
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
It's funny. I'm not actually worried about the living together situation. I think it's going to be perfectly fine because I know they get along really well. And it's basically just everything leading up to it.
Have you told your family?
I've told my mother, yes.
And how did she take it?
She was actually really happy for me.
Yeah.
She said, as long as I'm happy, just do whatever you want.
Hmm.
Carte blanche.
That's nice of her. That's very understanding of her, actually.
I have an amazing mother.
Yeah, it seems like it.
For the rest of my family,
the kind of thing a mom could freak out about.
Apparently, my sister listens to this, so she's going to find out via that.
Ooh. Shout out.
That's what we're here for.
Congratulations, and thank you for listening.
Dark secrets and family surprises.
And I'm sure the rest of my family will find out because of that.
The things that the hashtag Ask Air segments reveal on this show, there's no limits. There's no limits.
So when I visit home next summer, probably, that's going to be an interesting conversation.
Yeah, especially like, you know, so imagine a couple of years down the road, like, you really would want to bring both of them to like a family event.
Yep.
Yeah. I don't know. I you know, I could see it, actually. Yeah. I could see it, especially like when raising kids. Like that would really, because really, I mean, I you know, Angela is still close part of our family, but Hadiyah and I are in a relationship. But,
yeah.
You know, we all three raise the kids, and it is useful to have three
parents.
It does take a village. So I could see it. I really could see it one day is, you know, like you just go start popping out kids' beards and then you let the ladies and you all raise them together. And it would probably be really actually...
The cats will help, too.
And the dog. Don't forget.
Yeah,
the dog.
Right. Yeah. I'm already apparently going to have a family of animals. But yeah,
it's outside the box for sure, because it's very unconventional of you. And every time you do something that's unconventional, there's a certain amount of pushback or friction.
It's a risk.
Society,
yeah.
Or, you know what I mean? Like, there's always like some sort of like, there's people listening. They're going to have a very strong reaction.
Yeah.
There's people that find out they're going to have a strong reaction. There's grooves in society that are not built to accommodate that kind of a arrangement.
Yeah. Actually, one of the most worrying things about being polyamorous is talking about it on this show, because I don't know how the audience is going to react.
Right. Yeah, because it's probably going to be range. It's going to be a big range. There's going to be people that are sort of nonplussed by it, and then there'll be people that are shocked and appalled, I would imagine. Yeah. And so I applaud you for taking the risk of even talking about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, definitely.
Apparently it's all I do.
It's take a risk. Because <Ooh. laughs> it is a difficult thing to talk about. It really is, because anytime you step that far outside what people consider normal. And you know what's funny? Anytime you step that far out, it's risky. But you know what's funny is, like, if there's ever anything that is more inherently personal, it's how you love and it's your relationships. Like, if there's anything in life you're allowed to have latitude on, like, we can quibble over Android and iPhone and Linux and Windows, but, like, when it comes to how you love people, it feels like the last place people should really have any input.
Right. Yeah. That's where everybody's the most judgy.
It's true, yeah. Though. Yeah.
I feel
we're all as jealous, judgmental monsters.
It's weird because I feel like for a lot of years, I was just, you know, I was part of that normal group. And now I feel like I'm in an even larger minority that is less accepted than like the LGBT.
So I guess that'd be my question.
Community.
Is what did make that transition for you? Because, yeah, you're right. You are now in a minority group. And you probably weren't always somebody who was going to be poly. You weren't always somebody who thought about having multiple partners. Like, how did that come?
Yeah, so I'm
how
curious
did you
as well.
Reach that? Like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to have two girlfriends. Like, how did like
or did it transition? Like, you already were in a relationship and then decided.
First of all, I feel like almost every guy on the planet has probably had.
I'm probably okay. Women too.
But,
I'm sure.
Yeah, yeah. Like,
for sure. Actually, I bet. Yeah. You probably have lots of options.
I just thought about it a lot, and I felt. First of all, like, it was very selfish of me to expect that I should find one person that can satisfy all of my needs all the time.
Yeah. You are a diverse beard. That makes sense. And it's a lot of pressure on one person.
Yeah. And I kind of feel like that's why part of why the divorce rate is so high in the world.
Yeah. And people change, too.
Yeah.
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 Because that's like a constant pressure for years and years and years and years to try and not only keep yourself good, but keep someone else good. And I also just felt like it seemed easier to find separate people that satisfied different aspects of my life instead of trying to find this perfect unicorn person.
Yeah, I do know what you mean there. It's like somebody who likes these things I like, and somebody likes these things he's like, and these things, and these things, and these things, and it's almost impossible.
Or these different people that are good at providing different types of support for different situations.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And sometimes you have someone in your life, you know, it's like, well, we get along really well, or we're very close and connected, but you know, you can see each other for like a week and then not need to see each other for another month. Versus some people, it's like you want that like close everyday kind of partnership. Yep. There's all kinds of different.
My grandparents, one set of my grandparents, I have because of divorce and adoption, I have multiple sets of grandparents. But one of my sets of grandparents was much like that. They would go 2-3 months without seeing each other. They loved each other very much. They stayed together. They had many wonderful kids, and they would really celebrate each other when they saw each other.
Yeah.
And then they would. She's now retired, but she was a college professor and he was a farmer. So she would go teach school and he would
work the farm. Yeah.
And then they would see each other
In
the summer. And it worked well for them. Now, how do you feel about them seeing other people? How do you feel about them being poly, having multiple boyfriends,
for example?
What if one of their boyfriends becomes more of a priority?
That's their choice.
It seems like one of those situations that's easier said than done. Like, you know,
definitely relies on a lot of like trust.
It does.
And openness,
open communication.
Yeah. Because like, if it's gonna happen, tell me up front.
Well,
we'll deal with it.
It could potentially happen.
Oh,
if you're constantly open to new relationships, and there is sort of like this new relationship energy that you can get, you know, you can get hit with.
Yeah.
And so it can be hard, I would imagine, to watch a partner all of a sudden get really excited about somebody else and maybe pay less attention to yourself.
But does that balance out with the other?
I mean, that must have been something that's crossed your mind, right? Yeah. Does it balance out? Like, what are your thoughts on that? Because you must have pondered it.
I mean, one of them is technically already involved in another relationship. It doesn't really bother me as long as, you know, they don't, you know, start to exclude me.
Right.
To focus on the other person.
Right. And do you feel comfortable enough to say, to like raise a red flag and be like, I feel like maybe I'm taking a back seat?
Yeah, I've done it already.
Well, there you go. I mean, I think that's really the key, is just really being adult and having adult conversations and being open-minded and understanding, right? Yeah. Constantly. So you're not really a jealous person?
I have jealousy, but it's a fleeting jealousy. It doesn't really stick around.
Rationality takes hold eventually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It does seem like that's kind of part of it too, right? Like when you are in this model of like, this is my forever person, jealousy is kind of a natural thing to breed because, like, sure, we're all, like, you may be in a partnership, but, like, we all are attracted to attractive people. We all have ideas of what alternate futures might look like, and that's just normal. But, like, maybe if you have a more diverse set of, like, I'm open to others, I'm not defined by which particular set of partners I have, maybe that makes it easier for everyone.
I don't think it's necessarily for me myself, but, even just
that'd just be too many notifications. You couldn't handle it.
I really would be too much. It's already nearly too much. As you guys know.
You know, Chris, I'm that crazy guy that doesn't turn off notifications for anyone.
But, you know, really, I don't disparage anybody who has a go at this because I don't let society tell you how relationships.
Yeah, love who you want.
Yeah. Just let your heart guide the way.